long time. It's been a month. So let's shake the rust off, shall we? Let's just break it right out and say good evening, everyone. My name is Matt Rury, and I am...
Because I'm pissed off for greatness.
That's right. I am pissed off for greatness, Ray Lewis. Calvin Chamberlain, well, how do you feel about greatness?
I'm a little angry about it, you know? I don't like greatness is a little smug. I don't want greatness in my face, you know?
That's right. A little bit angry about greatness. But maybe we want to be greatness. And that's what we're going to bring you tonight here on Careless Whispers. Because it's been a long time, sir. So nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's been a while. Could you tell us for your exploits, Ray, since it's mostly been you, kind. I've been here silently
seething. That's right.
In the back.
I have been gone. I've been gone multiple times. I went to the lovely state of Florida, to the Fort Lauderdale area for work purposes. This past week, I was in Washington, D.C., and for the first time, I'm coming to you live from Natick, Massachusetts, where I'm sitting in my very own living room, and I still can't believe it. So, that's what's going on with me, but I'm back, and I know that the people out there have really been itching to hear us as well.
People.
What people? Well, I know Sam in San Diego is really hoping to hear some good Celtics talk tonight because he's been listening to the local radio in Boston, even though he's in San Diego, and there's really not much Celtics talk going on. And when they do talk Celtics, it's very skeptical. And I don't think that's going to be what comes your way here tonight. But we're going to lead off with the NBA Finals because that thing it looks pretty lopsided right now. We'll have to wait and see what happens in Game 3. But how do you feel about these first two games, Calvin? Is it what you expected, or is this not the norm? Because I kind of looked at the Oklahoma City bench in the last series, and I looked at the Cleveland bench now, and I thought, I don't really see much of a difference here. So I kind of expected Golden State to do pretty well in this series, and it's just – I'm not surprised is what I'm trying to say. I think Cleveland will play better in the next couple of games, but what's your takeaway from the first two here?
It's funny how quickly perception changes, you know? I mean, when Cleveland won, what did they win their first 10 playoff games? People were like talking about, like, maybe this is an all-time great team. And, you know, the Warriors were down 3-1 at that point, and people were just getting ready to jump right back off the analytics bandwagon. Like, look, difference maker is LeBron, and it's funny how different things are already, but I think that the finals so far are going exactly as I thought that they were going to go. Off the air last week to myself, I predicted Warriors in 5, and I feel pretty good about that so far, and the reason I picked Warriors in 5 is I just didn't think that the Cavs could do what the Thunder did, because they don't have the personnel for that, really. Like, the Thunder were all
right,
arms
that's
and
what
length.
I was getting at.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If Ibaka and Durant can get out to that three-point line and shade and then get back to the rim, I think so far in this series we've seen the Cavaliers actually do a pretty good job of defending the three-point line of the Warriors for the most part. The problem is like, they can't get back in time. Guys get screened, and they're just having easy rolls to the basket. You see the Warriors just murdering them headed to the basket. And, you know, and we'll get into this a little more detailed when it comes to legacy talk. But it's like, was the Cavaliers' offense ever as good as, like, the numbers were making it out to be? Because you know, I see what they're doing in this final, and they're just getting shut down. The Warriors are all over the place. I think so much of it just depended on LeBron opening up space for everyone else. And I don't know if you've seen these stats, Ray, but in Game 1, LeBron was defended by Andre Iguodala 22 times, and he put up 2 shots. He was 1 of 2. The other times were either a turnover or he had to pass it out. He was forced to pass it out.
Before you give those game two stats, these are the types of things that earn Iguodala NBA Finals MVP last year, or earned him that last year, and could very well this year if the next two games play out in a similar fashion. Go ahead.
Yeah, in game two, he defended him 18 times, and LeBron was one of three. So 40 times guarding him as the primary defender, LeBron's gathered him five shots in that period of time. And I think the difference, between, at least through two games, between LeBron last year and LeBron this year is that, Iguodala really defended him well last year. But last year, LeBron was still able to get his. Last year in the finals, LeBron carrying the team on his back was still pretty amazing. This year, LeBron, he had seven turnovers in that game, too. LeBron is not carrying the team on his back. He's not even bothering with it. He can't even get to the rim.
I don't know. I think he's looked pretty good, but not against Andre Iguodala in a one-on-one matchup, obviously. But I think overall, he has still done a lot, and he's done pretty much everything he can. But you're right. He's not the same player as he was last year. He's taken a step back. He's getting a little bit older. He's hitting that phase where it doesn't matter how old you are. If you've played a certain amount of years in the league, your body just starts to break down. You've played too many minutes. You've played too many games. And he still has an opportunity to extend his career and make it a little longer and perform at a very high level for a few more years before he shuts it down. But right now, it's just not enough to do by himself, because there's two guys on the other side that are younger and just as good, and then a handful of other guys that, even though they're creeping up in age, can still get it done. And that's not even mentioning Draymond Green, because we've mentioned Iguodala, and the two superstars that are young, obviously, are Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. But Green gets it done as well, and he's a young player. So LeBron just can't match up with these three young players and a couple of other wily veterans by himself, and he's really not getting much support. And that's not to give him an excuse, because I don't think he deserves one. The expectations for this team were very high, and they have fallen very short of those expectations, at least the first two games of this NBA Finals. So I'm not really shocked by it, but if they don't come out in Game 3 and play well and at least make it a game through the first 3.5 quarters, then I don't really know if he's going to have another shot at it, because they waltzed their way through the Eastern Conference, and they're looking like they're about to get run right out of there without winning a game by a dominant force. So if he can't get it now, and if they can't come close now, I'm not sure that he's got another championship in him, Calvin.
Right. Kevin Love left the game in the second quarter of Game 2. So it was basically just, especially because J.R. Smith is not taking shots, It essentially came down to LeBron and Kyrie Irving on the with the scores of that team. LeBron only took 17 total shots, where he had 19 points. He had seven turnovers. I do feel like he has to do more. I don't feel like he's done all he could. And granted, like, the defense is locking him down, but it makes me think. And it really, I'm not saying that he's done. I'm not trying to crap on him and say he's like the reason why they're losing. But what I'm saying is, well, several things. One, people keep wanting to compare because it's the same two teams playing a second time, and this year's team compared to last year's team. I think ultimately, and there's been this sort of debate about, like, well, do Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love like really help this team? And I've sort of made the argument that against the Warriors that they wouldn't necessarily help the team. Although I think Love's been a little bit better than Kyrie. I think both of them are disasters defensively, and that was always my argument.
Oh, like, yeah. Well,
but here's the thing, though. It's like they slowed the Warriors down last year with Tristan Thompson and with Mozgov playing big. But that's not going to one. People forget that, like, that was the Warriors' first game in the finals. They looked tentative. They they basically choked up on the handle a little bit and weren't as good offensively as you might imagine. And two, like, people forget by the second half of that series, they were running, like, the Cavaliers had to abandon the plan to play Mozgov and to a lesser extent Thompson because the Warriors figured out how to run them off the court. They can't run that same game plan they ran last year. Dellavedova is... Yeah, they can still play Dellavedova, but they can't play Mozgov, and they can't really play Thompson that much. So it's like, what? Yeah, people who are expecting like them to just go back to what they did before. You need Kyrie for your offense. You know, they scored 77 game points in game two. I think they scored like 89 in game one. I can pull it up real quick. But
well,
like,
I just before the series started, I said off the air. Since we're doing that, we haven't spoken in a month, that this series didn't come down to LeBron James. He could average a triple-double, and it still probably wasn't going to be enough to beat the Warriors. So it really comes down to the next best guy, which to me is Kyrie Irving, or it's supposed to be Kyrie Irving. Kevin Love aside, because we can get into a whole other tangent about Kevin Love and how soft he is and how the expectations... Or the temptation for fans around Boston right now has been tempered quite a bit by this finals, and people are looking down on Kevin Love around here. So we can get into a whole different tangent about that. But Kyrie Irving is the one that I think needed to step up his game and needed to take the step to the next level as a player. If this Cleveland team was even going to have a chance, he needed to keep up with Steph Curry, and he has not even been close in the first two games.
Yeah, I still think that, look, Kevin Love, here's the thing, multiple things that people forget. And it's like, one, matchups are a big deal. You know what I mean? Like Kevin Love can play against almost every team in the NBA. He just can't play against the Warriors. Because they bring him into a screen every time they switch on everybody and someone's going to shoot, you know, a 35. Kevin Love's, like, defense is it's not as bad as people think it is. Like, Kyrie's defense is every bit as bad as anyone says it is. He's one of the worst defensive point guards in the league. But Love, like, yeah, he makes the wrong decision sometimes, and I think that backfires and he's not a shot blocker. But as a man defender... He probably tops out around average. It's just the Warriors, like, that's not going to work against the Warriors. He's not long enough. They can still shoot, you know, long-ass threes above his arms. And because of that, like, Steph and Clay haven't even had to use him, but utilize him in this series mostly, except for as decoys. And they're getting such wide open attempts at the rim because the Cavaliers are so afraid of the three-point shot. I don't think any of those guys they have in their team rotate quickly enough to help defend that, except for Thompson. But you put Thompson on the floor, and then your offense just goes to garbage. And I don't think they don't have enough scorers. I don't see I don't see any answer. What would you do if you pretend you're Tyronn Lue, right? What do you do for this next game? What's your plan? What's your game plan?
Well, I think it kind of depends on if Kevin Love is actually going to play or not. First of all, because he's got this concussion issue where he took that elbow to the back of the head and stayed on the floor for a long time. Now, I can't question a man with a concussion, I guess, but I think that it's normally 3 to 5 days before they say that you can start practicing with the team and stuff like that. Maybe the doctors aren't going to clear him to play, but if this is in the gray area where it's his call and he doesn't suit up, then people are going to question him as far as his toughness is concerned. But either way, it depends on his availability. But you probably want to try and go a little bit bigger if you can and let them shoot threes. And I mean, not let them shoot threes, still get a hand in their face, but you have to get guys that are going to fight through screens and at least jump out, and then also have a guy under the basket that's going to be able to rebound if they do miss. You need to feed off the crowd if you're Cleveland, and you need to play aggressive at the three-point line, and if it means getting a little bit bigger out there with guys that can't react and are going to allow a drive to the basket perhaps, then so be it. You need to change something up if you're Cleveland because it's not working right now. So if they're so worried about the three-point line here and they're losing ground on these screens, which they are, then it's time to force them to the middle and put another big down there. And maybe even if Kevin Love goes, he plays less minutes and you don't spread it out as much as you have. Don't try and match them. Don't try and play their game. The only way that you're going to do this is grit it out, kind of like Oklahoma City did. And their role players weren't even that great in that seven-game series. But when you have a guy like Steven Adams who's going to push some people around, regardless of how effective he is and how many points he scores, it sets a tone. And if Cleveland can find somebody to rough these guys up a little bit, then I think it might throw them off their game and they have a chance. But either way, Golden State is going to get theirs. And they just, to me, look like the NBA champions right now.
All right, so give me your like crunch time five for the Cavaliers. Obviously, LeBron's out there. Do you try to go bigger or do you try to go even smaller? I feel like smaller is not going to work for them.
Well, right? No, I don't think smaller is going to work. But so you're going with Kyrie Irving, of course. And
let's say Love can play.
Love can play. I mean, Love is not in there for the fourth quarter for me. He's not. You have to put Tristan Thompson out there. And I guess depending on the situation, if Golden State is going real small, I still don't want Kevin Love out there. I would even rather put J.R. Smith on the floor than Kevin Love if they go really small. But otherwise, I mean, I think even a guy like Richard Jefferson is better to have out there in crunch time. It really depends, Calvin, though. But it's definitely LeBron, it's definitely Thompson, and it's definitely Kyrie Irving. And then you can sort of mix and match with those few guys that I just said. If you need some shooting, then you're throwing J.R. Smith on the floor. If you need a guy that is actually going to be a little bit tougher, I would put Richard Jefferson over Kevin Love. So take that as it is. And maybe you're going with Mozgov as well, but I look at him as a soft player in general.
Let me ask you a Richard Jefferson-related question. Do you think Richard Jefferson has been shaving his head since birth? Do you think there was ever a time? Like, think about it. Like, I remember Richard Jefferson in Arizona. I don't remember a single time when he had even, like, a buzz cut worth of hair. Can you?
I'm going to Google it right now and find out. Yeah, he had hair. Let's see. Here's one picture of him. What team is this? Richard Jefferson. He's wearing a red. Did he play for Indiana or something? This looks like it could be an Indiana jersey.
A really young picture of him with hair. I stand corrected. You're right.
Yeah, you see it. Yep. And
yeah.
No, he went to Arizona, so it's probably an Arizona jersey. I think he had hair in college, but yeah, since then he's been bicking that thing. Good for him. Anyway, I'd have him on the floor over Kevin Love at this point because I just think he's a little bit grittier. He's somebody that can at least try to body somebody else up. And I just look at Kevin Love as a soft player. I'm with all these people around Boston that are starting to look down on him because he seems to bow out early. And I just don't look at him as a guy that can A, make a shot in crunch time, or B, defend in crunch time. And while Irving is not a guy that can defend at all, his offensive prowess is enough that you have to have him on the floor. Unless you're trying to get a defensive stop, then maybe you're throwing Dellavedova out there or something, you know?
Maybe consider playing them both. So let me briefly get to that then. I think that Love, particularly if Cleveland, it's fascinating to me. Because, like, if I was a Boston fan in this scenario, like, I guess people are prisoners of the moment, so I get it. But if I'm a Boston fan in this scenario, I'm hoping Cleveland flames out in 4 or 5, and then Cleveland panics. Because
I'm not trying to say that I wouldn't want Kevin Love for the right deal. If they can fleece Cleveland and keep their picks and keep their young, solid core and still add Kevin Love, then that's fine with me. But if you're going to talk about getting rid of a Marcus Smart or an Avery Bradley or something like that for Kevin Love, I'm out at this point.
Wait. You're telling me that you wouldn't trade Avery Bradley straight up for Kevin Love right now? That's what you're telling me? That's what Kevin Love's value is? That's fascinating to me.
Avery Bradley just made the all-defensive NBA team, Calvin. He's showing the people around the league that he is a great defensive player, and he's actually coming into his own. So I feel like at this point, just seeing what Kevin Love has done and being so inconsistent in the playoffs, I just the talent level is higher than Avery Bradley, sure, but I think I'd still rather keep Bradley.
Look, I like Avery Bradley. I think that, like, he's improved this year in particular, more in the last year too. You know, over the last couple of years of his career, you know, more than I expected. I think he's a good player, but he's not Kevin Love. That's interesting to me. So would you trade Jay Crowder in a pick for Kevin Love? I'm trying to see what your base.
Not that number three pick, I wouldn't, but probably if they want to take the 16 and Crowder for Love, that I would probably do that.
As
gritty as Crowder is, and as good as he is, and as important as he is to the Celtics right now, the talent level that you can get at that three pick and then develop it, plus Kevin Love right now, that's a certain upgrade from Crowder, and you would have to find another guy to fill his role as far as the grit is concerned. Maybe you hope Marcus Smart takes that step up, or maybe you find another guy around the league to fill in like that. But I think I would do Crowder, even though his deal is so sweet. I'm just going to contradict myself here in a couple weeks, so who cares?
But the other thing is, now that Love's under contract, it's essentially anyone who's under contract is going to have a kid deal in 2 years. Do you know what I mean? That's basically where we're at.
True. All right, well, since we're talking about the Celtics, let's not do that yet, actually. Let's touch on LeBron's legacy quickly, because there's been some discussion around my email threads and just the radio airwaves here in Boston as well about where LeBron stands as far as a top all-time player. Some people like to argue that he's the best ever. I like to say that he could possibly be at some point, but he's not right now. I don't even know if I have him in the top five, Calvin, but this finals here, honestly, I said it last year too, even if he doesn't win, I don't think it matters as far as his legacy is concerned. It's impressive that he's gone to six finals in a row, but the competition on the way to those six finals has not been what other teams have faced, but still gotten close, like the Spurs, like the Thunder just about every year. Those teams have gotten close, and they're facing tougher competition, so I look on some of their top players a little higher than LeBron James in that regard, but it is an impressive feat that he's been able to do that and get there every time. A lot of people are just going to look at all the losses that he's had in the finals and say there's no way that he's ever going to catch Jordan or anything like that. But if his career goes on for 5-6 more years and he gets to the finals a few more times, maybe he wins another ring or two, he's got to be in the conversation for the best all time. He's just not there yet. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of comparisons between, like, people are saying, like, you know, he's going to be the new Wilt, where, like, certain people blame him for not winning enough. And Wilt also has two NBA championships, and people act like he wasn't a winner. I guess I'm sort of two minds of this. Like, okay, so let's just hypothetically say LeBron loses in these finals, right, just for the sake of argument. And then he becomes 2-5 in the finals, right? Is LeBron's two? Are you arguing that LeBron's 2-5 is like worse than like Dwayne Wade's two? You know, I guess Dwayne Wade has three. Hakeem Olajuwon's 2-0. That's what we're arguing?
Some people would be arguing. Yes, probably. I wouldn't argue that. I mean, Olajuwon was an amazing player, and he is definitely a top 10 all time. But I mean. He's probably not as good as LeBron James. Now, the reason I wanted to really talk about this is because, I mean, I take Kobe over LeBron James, to be honest with you. I'd put Kobe in the top 10 all time. And, I mean, some places don't even have him sniffing the top 10. So, I hate doing it as a Celtics fan. And I also hate putting LeBron ahead of Larry Bird on my list as well. But he's not top five to me yet. There's a lot of Lakers up there. There's Jordan, of course. I would take Tim Duncan and Bill Russell over LeBron James any day, and that's probably where it ends for me. I'm going with Magic, Kareem, Wilt, Jordan, Russell, Duncan, and of course Kobe Bryant, like I said. So unfortunately, Celtics fans, it may be blasphemy to you, and it hurts me as well. I have Bird right there, right behind Mr. LeBron James. I think LeBron has done enough at this point to surpass Larry Bird. And if Bird hadn't been injured, then the story is probably a lot different. If his back didn't give out and he didn't miss all that time towards the end of his career, then we'd be singing a different tune. But at this point, I think LeBron has shown a lot, and I think he's going to continue on this pace for a few more years. And when it's all said and done, he's definitely going to be up there. So it's just a matter of time. And it hurts. It sucks because I don't like the guy. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his personality. But as a player, you have to give him credit.
Yeah, it's tough to make the Bird argument because, like you said, the length of his prime, what was 8-9 years? LeBron is already in, what, year 15, I think? 14,
right, pretty much.
Something like that. So,
It's 13. He was drafted in 03, LeBron.
13, okay. I do want to go back to the finals thing because I guess my thing is, like, I don't get this idea where, like, people don't get credit. Like, people don't get credit for some winning. Like, let's say LeBron's career, okay, is exactly the same length as, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon. So I'm not saying who's a better player. I'm just saying, like, Hakeem is seen as a winner because he went 2-0 in the finals. Where, like, LeBron will be seen as a loser in a lot of circles because he went 2-5 in the finals. But, like, so they essentially both won two titles, but, like, LeBron won enough to get to another 5 finals. So why is, like, LeBron a bigger loser than Olajuwon, other than the fact that, like, he lost? Like, I don't get how losing in the finals is worse than losing in the first round or losing in the second round.
Here's a crazy hypothetical situation for you, Calvin, that will feed into this argument just a little bit. Let's say Kevin Durant, and we can talk about this in a minute as well, walks away and he goes to Boston, or he teams up with Carmelo Anthony in New York, or he finds a team in the Eastern Conference that he can go and get to the finals with easily. And LeBron, on the other hand, goes to the Western Conference, and say he jumps on Portland, or say he goes down to New Orleans to play with Anthony Davis, and he gets that team to the finals. But Kevin Durant's Eastern Conference team is better than LeBron's Western Conference team. And that happens 2 years in a row. Forget about the Warriors for a second. This is all hypothetical. LeBron loses both of those finals, but he's in the finals for the 8th year in a row. People are going to look at him as even more of a loser because of the situation that that I'm building right here.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter if he gets there another 5 or 6 times. If he doesn't win any of them, people are still going to look at him as a loser. And to me, you have to look at the body of work and you have to see what the path was. Did he have difficult times getting there? Yes, he did have a couple of years where it was tough and he had to put teams on his back. Other times they breezed through because the competition was nothing and it was an easy road to the finals. So to me, it would be more impressive if that hypothetical situation did happen than if it were just him rolling through the Eastern Conference a couple times and putting a team on his back and then meeting the best team in the Western Conference and losing. That's the same old tired story.
That's why I'm of two minds of this, because it's like, just as a general argument, okay, I hate the idea that, like, that only, and you know this about me already, that, like, only winning the championship is an accomplishment, and, like, getting to the NBA final is abject failure. I don't like that. In fact, that I'm not a college basketball fan, as, you know, compared to the NBA, but I will admit that this is the one area at least, where college basketball gets it right. You get credit for making it to the Final Four. You can get credit for making it to the Sweet 16 or Elite 8. Those are all things that get applied to your team. I think that, like, that we should make note of the teams that make the conference final, and we should make note of the teams that make the finals, and we should celebrate.
But how often do people remember the runner-up for the NCAA championship? Unless it happens multiple years in a row.
No. Look, I'm not talking about, like, conversation.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm...
here's what happens, though, okay? Is when we're talking about, the name of college basketball, when we're talking about Krzyzewski and Duke, we don't say, like, we don't just say three national championships. We say, I don't know how many he has, three, five, seven, whatever, however many he has.
Oh, boy, you're going to get Mad Dog to call in here, Krzyzewski,
yeah.
Calling him that. Go ahead.
We say seven national championships, 16 Final Fours. You see what I'm saying? We like to give him props for that. We don't do that. And then the year he does make the Sweet 16, we go, another Sweet 16. When he makes it, we go, great, another Sweet 16 from Coach K. That's his eighth. We don't necessarily go like, oh, great, another conference semifinal for LeBron. We do when he makes seven finals in a row and it becomes historical, we do just for this case. But we're not doing it for anybody else. You know, we don't talk, we're like, as far as anyone is concerned, Kevin Durant has had zero NBA success, even though he's been to an NBA Finals and, another two conference finals? You know, like, I just...
Yeah, and a couple of close MVP ballots and some scoring races that he's won as well. Things like that. All-star games, all that stuff.
That's separate, too. I'm just talking about, like, success in terms of team success. But I guess the point I'm making is I agree with your point about the East being weak, and so that's sort of why I'm like of both minds about this, because yes, in a vacuum or in any situation, this finals run for LeBron is impressive, but then when you break it down and you look at every team they've beaten, it's like every team they've beaten is a team that they should have beaten, right? With like in like how many other truly great players. I mean, starting from, you can make an argument for the Celtics, but they were at the end of their run. Like, I don't know that any of those.
Yeah.
When LeBron beat the Celtics, it was more of a psychological thing that kept the Celtics in that series, right? Like, LeBron's talent in that series overshadowed any of the individual Celtics.
And I feel like over the years, LeBron has not developed a rival, and it's not that he hasn't been on the same teams. It's just that he hasn't developed a specific team that he can look at and say, wow, that team was really tough against me. I had to go against that team and beat them every time. The Celtics did it with the Pistons, and
in the East.
Then the Bulls did it. And I'm just basically I'm saying, even now in the Western Conference, doesn't matter who's good, but there are a couple of teams that are good every single year, year after year. The Spurs are there pretty much every year, and they've become a rival of a lot of teams in the modern era of the NBA. And it was happening in the 80s as well in the Western Conference, with those great Portland teams battling the Lakers and things like that. And it's just, even as small as a rivalry can be, that rivalry builds. And LeBron just doesn't seem to have that with anyone. I can't think of a team in the East that consistently battled him and he got past, because when the Celtics were good in 08 and 09, he wasn't really there yet. He did eventually get past that team, and he deserves a lot of credit for that, because he did put the team on his back in that series where they just snuffed the Celtics out in the Boston Garden. So that was a tough one to swallow. You have to just give him credit for it. That's all there is to it. But the point is that other than that, he hasn't really developed that sort of team that's always there, and he always has to get over the hump. And I feel like that takes away from his credibility as far as saying that he's one of the best ever, and it's because he goes to the finals and things like that. If you're using the fact that he goes to the finals as an example, then you have to look at the way he got there. And to me, him going there six times in a row is great, but like you're saying, a team that gets there or gets to the series before five out of six times and gets to the finals a couple times as well is just as impressive in a tougher conference like the Western Conference. That's all.
I think for me, you know, getting back to the ranking conversation briefly, I think for me, what it comes down to is winning is, like, to me, you're talking about what makes a great player and what doesn't. Winning is just one of many categories, right? You know, what do you do offensively? What does he do defensively? Right. Rebounding, passing, skills, all-around dominance. Like, you know, how did he do in big moments? All of those things factor in, and I think that even if LeBron goes to another 10 finals, and I know that's not feasible, and loses them all, and ends up, you know, 2-15 in the finals, I think that the basis of the fact that he has two titles and another 5 trips to the finals, I think it's hard for at least for me. See, apparently easy for other people. It's hard for me to keep him out of the winners category. I think he fits in the category of guys who won, who did it. He's not a Barkley. He's not a Malone. He's a winner. And once you say that, then I think you have to set, okay, he's in that category. Let's set that aside and figure out, like, where his game ranks among other guys who have won. Now, maybe you want to argue that he needs one more to really become, a guy who's, I usually say a two-time champion is somebody who's in the winner's category, but maybe you think like he needs to win 3.
No, I'm with you. I think two-time is right there. And that's why Olajuwon is right up there in the top 10. That's why Bird is there, even though he had his struggles.
Three.
And I thought he only had 2. I'll double-check that. But,
I'm pretty sure
he
has 3.
Could be losing my mind here. Let's move on before I really embarrass myself. We are going to go to the Celtics, though.
What's that?
82. Hold on.
I'm pretty sure the Celtics won 3 titles in the 80s. The Lakers won 5 in
81, 84. That's right. You know what? I thought his career started after that 81 championship. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't born yet, but that's my mistake, of course. So, yeah, you're right. 3. 81, 84, 86. Either way, now that we're talking about the Celtics, let's shift gears a little bit and sort of see what we think about them and how their offseason has gone. And call in number here is 323-642-1484 if you want to get in on the action. Let's first talk about Kevin Durant as far as his free agency is concerned.
Roll that into the
Celtics, because that's the first thing that's on everybody's mind. They want to know, what chance do the Celtics have of catching Kevin Durant? And I think it's a 0.5412% chance.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't want to get into this or even the specifics of the draft too much, because we're going to have stuff to talk about going in the weeks going forward. But as far as Durant goes, I'm wondering, forget what chance the Celtics have. What chance does anyone have at getting Kevin Durant other than Oklahoma City? In other words, would you bet the house on him leaving or staying?
Did you hear his exit interview? Thunder practice.
It sounded like he was out. It sounded like I'm out, right? That's makes
no.
Reality.
I don't. I disagree.
Oh, really?
I took that totally differently. Maybe it's because I saw it on SportsCenter and I didn't hear it full. But the way that SportsCenter portrayed it was that he was going to stick around in Oklahoma City. It sounded like he was saying that everyone there, including himself, was going to be back next year and better, and that they were going to go for it again. That's the way that SportsCenter portrayed it. So maybe that's ESPN spin. I'm not sure. I didn't hear the full thing.
The quote I heard from him was like, Google Kevin Durant. The first thing that comes up is Kevin Durant Lakers. Like, I mean, maybe it's just because I'm in L.A. and it's being shaded towards me. But, the first thing I heard him say was, I'm looking, immediately after the game said, I'm looking forward to seeing what teams can offer me.
Oh, he did say that. He did say all of that. But he ended the interview by sort of saying, I really like playing with the guys around here, and that's the number one thing to me. I have to like who I'm playing with. I'm not just going to go somewhere because of the money if I don't like the guys that are on that team. And that he thinks that everybody, and he said, he used the word we. I think we will all come back next year better than we were this year, and something along those lines, asking some sort of blah blah blah. But he used the word "we" when talking about players that were going to come back to Oklahoma City next season. That's how he ended his interview. So that's what I took away from it. Because I don't know, maybe it was just him speaking with the wrong pronoun or something, but it sounded like he was more interested in coming back and trying again than he was in testing the waters, even if it meant a few million dollars being taken off the table for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that he ends up going back, if you ask me, just because I think that the 1 year just makes much sense. Yeah, supposedly he's been giving teams. Have you heard about this? I'm sure you have. You keep up with this, but he's been giving teams a list of the players that he would like that team to get, or for him to like decide to come to that team in free agency. And the Celtics supposedly had it. And so, look, yeah, it was a big deal in Boston.
Yeah, listen, that's great. That's great for me. I'll take that. I'll look at that list all day. But. I think you're right, is that if Oklahoma City is willing to do it, that, and why shouldn't they be willing to do it, that he has to sign a one-year deal to match up with Russell Westbrook, and then you find a way to get them both to stick around, or you are rebuilding in Oklahoma City. But I think you have to take that gamble, because they were so close to the NBA Finals this year, and they have been one of the more consistent teams throughout the playoffs over the last few years, especially since those guys have really started to play well together. And if it means shuffling your bench and your role players around a little bit and finding some other guys to come in and try and fit into the team, then so be it. But I think that you have to take that chance and give Durant the 1 year max, let him come back, see how it goes, and hope that you can find a way to swing both of them again for some extensions after that.
Yeah, I'm personally hoping for that, because I think we have a pretty good shot at Russell Westbrook. And if we can get Russell Westbrook, we might be able to get Durant as well. But we're not getting Durant in the free agency class. In fact, I was trying to research Kevin Durant quotes right now, and I came across a full-on Fox Sports of like the team that if he left the Thunder, which team would he be most likely to go to? And Boston ended up first with 18% among five or six teams. And the Lakers were not even included in that list. Not
right.
Even one of the options. Yeah,
well,
we're not even good enough to be an option.
That's right, because your team stinks. He wants to win. He's not looking for a team that he can have the glitz and glamour. He'd probably rather play for the Clippers than the Lakers at this point.
We could find multiple other people to play with him.
He knows he's been in the league 9 years and he hasn't won yet, and he's finally building something with a specific player and a team as a nucleus. And Billy Donovan's doing a pretty good job as coach, I think, although he did get a little flustered there in Game 7, in my opinion. But the bottom line is these guys like playing with each other, and for whatever reason, they think that they have what it takes. We can talk about Russell Westbrook on a different day, because I still have a lot of questions about that guy. And you can talk about his talent all you want, but he needs to find a second gear. He needs to learn when to slow down, or else he's just going to lose games like I believe that he did in Game 6. I think that you have to put a lot of blame on him, because he was just jacking shots in bad situations. And I think that he needs to find a way to find that second gear, especially when you're leading, and slow things down and just play the grinded out game that I don't think Golden State would have been able to keep up with had they stuck to it. But Westbrook, to me, got a little frenzied. So that speaks to him as a player, and we can do that another time, unless you want a little rebuttal. But we do have a caller on the line, and I'm not sure if he's actually wanting to come on or not.
We'll have to get into that next week, because I actually thought Durant was a bigger problem in that series. Well, we'll
in the series, maybe,
week.
But in that Game 6, I was looking at Westbrook as a big issue there. Anyway, what more can the Celtics do, or will the Celtics be doing for the next couple of weeks here? We got the NBA draft coming up in a few weeks. That's the big excitement now. Is Danny going to trade the pick? Is he going to keep the pick? Does he take Dragon Bender? Does he wait till the Cavs get swept out of the NBA Finals and try and flip something for Kevin Love? Is he going to throw the house at Chicago and hope they give him Jimmy Butler? What are the other options out there for Danny Ainge? I obviously would love to see Jimmy Butler in green, but I'm not so sure how realistic that is.
We'll go through all the scenarios next week and break down how you feel about them. Or after the finals, I figured that's for a future show. What I want to know is a couple of things. One, we really haven't had a chance to talk since the draft, so I'm curious. Like, as a Celtics fan, what was your feeling when you ended up with the third pick? Because the way the draft works is they make the first 10 picks of the 13 pick lottery. And the final three teams are sort of all sitting there as they go to commercial. So at that point, you know, as a Celtics fan, you're going to get one of the top three picks. You know that this is essentially a what's been said. I don't know, whether or not it's true, obviously, but it's been said this is a two-person draft. Everyone else is sort of underneath that top level. So when you ended up with that third pick granted, this is, way it's free money for you because it was, the Nets' terrible record that got you that pick.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, when you were able to the third pick, I'm just wondering, as a Celtics fan, did you feel excitement or disappointment?
I guess it was slightly disappointing, but at the same time, they were mathematically supposed to get the fifth pick. So to me, looking back on past lotteries and when they're supposed to have a high pick and they get screwed, quote-unquote screwed by the system, or they lose the lottery and they have a high percentage, or the one time that they actually move up in the lottery, they lose because Len Bias tragically passes away. It seems like even though people look at this team and their symbol is a clover and their mascot is a guy named Lucky, they have not been lucky in the lottery over the years. So to me, getting a third pick was that they didn't lose because they were supposed to get mathematically. They were going to get the fifth pick, and they were sitting in the third slot as far as the third worst record is concerned. So, one or two is a win. Three is that's great. I'll take it. Four or five would have been even more disappointing. And if they had fallen anywhere past that, they could have gotten the sixth pick. I guess very slim chances. But if they had fallen to the sixth, that would have been extremely disappointing.
Yeah, I had read that was the first time the draft had conformed to the actual record in NBA history. So I'm pretty sure you guys were in line for the third as far as the worst record. I could be wrong about that, but
worst record the third definitely. But the way that the lottery is set up, the Celtics only had like a 16% chance to get that third pick,
yeah.
And they had like a 21% chance to get the fifth pick or something like that along those lines. So,
okay. Right.
So yes, they,
okay.
As far as the record is concerned, it was third, but because of all the other factors in the lottery, the amount of ping pong balls they had was conducive to the fifth pick.
Right, because of so many other teams had the potential to jump them. I got you.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, well, we can go to the caller now if you want.
Well, he's gone, so let's move on to the next topic, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's disappointing.
I guess he didn't want to talk to us. He just wanted to listen and hear our smooth, silky voices. I was going to say, what's going on out there with the NBA logo talk out there? Poor Jerry West is getting ripped apart by the loudest mouth on ESPN at this point.
This guy is the worst. First of all, yeah, I got it. Did you hear that his like rant about how the Cavaliers didn't like quit and they're like it's like literally the worst thing he's ever seen and how pathetic they are. It's like he's so over the top with his analysis and outrage about nothing. But he
makes Chris Broussard look like a baby puppy. Baby puppy. That is a double. Yeah, a newborn puppy.
But so he had this rant the other day when he was like, I don't know how he ended up on the NBA logo, but he was really trying to criticize LeBron, and he was like, I think that's what it is. He compared LeBron to Jerry West, and he went on this whole rant about how Jerry West doesn't deserve to be on the NBA silhouette because, first of all, nobody knows who Jerry West is as a player. That's the first thing he said anymore. And then he was like, and then to be a guy who lost 8 out of 9 finals is a loser, and Michael Jordan should be on the NBA silhouette is
uh-huh.
basically what he
yeah,
said.
Yeah, of course he thought it should be Jordan, of course. Not yeah. Magic, not Kobe, not something like that. He's going with Jordan, right? Not Bill Russell, who's if you want to talk about going to the finals and winning, it shouldn't be Bill Russell if that's your argument, Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, he's just the worst. Like, here's the thing. One, again, going back to our argument before, like, even the Boston Celtics, even Celtics fans, even you, even, like, any caller we could take right now, I don't know, is there anybody alive who hates Jerry West? Really? People don't like Jerry West? I feel like everybody likes Jerry West.
I think, you know what, there actually are radio personalities around here that don't like Jerry West, and they've alluded to it on the air, but they won't get into it for some reason. I don't know why, but, like, Mike Felger really hates Jerry West. He just doesn't like him. And I think Maz is kind of with him. If anybody listens to Felger and Maz, but I don't know. I mean, I don't have any hard feelings against Jerry West. I have no reason to hate him. But if you're gonna put a modern day guy on the NBA logo, why not go with a big winner like Robert Horry?
Or why change? I don't understand. I just don't get the notion of like changing the NBA logo at all. First of all. When he's like, oh, you need to put somebody else in the logo. Look, I'm on ESPN right now. I'm looking at the NBA logo. Is it even possible, if you don't know, to tell that it's Jerry West? It's just a white silhouette of a player. You know what I mean? Like, the idea that we would have to, like, make this silhouette look like a different person. It's like, this is still what the logo of the NBA looks like.
He wants the Nike symbol. Like, he wants the Air Jordan logo up there. That's what he's looking for. He's trying to get some money off of this, I'm sure.
Yeah, Jordan already has an iconic logo, and it's connected to a billion-dollar company. I think he's good. I think his images are good. I don't understand why he like felt the need to take cheap pot shots at an old NBA player, except because he wanted to make LeBron out to be a loser, like this loser Jerry West. Even though, again, if you talk to any of the Celtics from the 60s, like, they all loved Jerry West, and the reason why Jerry West got named NBA Finals MVP when the Lakers lost was because everyone loved Jerry West. And everyone felt bad for him. That's the point. But whatever. I don't even care about that. I don't even need to, like, defend his legacy. It just bothers me that this guy just comes on the air trying to, like, take shots at an NBA legend and trying to change the logo for no reason. He gets nothing out of that other than, you know, the press and, you know, idiots like me talking about it.
All right. Then I guess we can stop talking about it, yeah?
Yeah.
Which one do you want to do first here, the journalist or the greatest of all? Should we leave?
Let's do the journalist.
All right. Save the best for last. I agree.
So, top MMA reporter, Ariel Helwani. I don't know how much you actually know about MMA. Probably not that much, right?
No, not a ton. I mean, if Brock Lesnar's name pops up or CM Punk's name pops up, I'll see what they're up to. I don't know a lot about it, though. If it's on in a bar, I'll watch it.
Well, that's funny because this story is essentially somewhat about Brock Lesnar.
Yep. So I know about this story.
Yeah. Ariel Helwani got the news that Brock Lesnar was about to sign a deal to fight at UFC 200. Yep. And he works for the site MMAfighting.com. He posted the news on the website. He was at a UFC event at the time. And they, you know, he went back to the press room. And the Dana White immediately took away his press credential and the press credential of his videographer and his photographer and said, okay, you guys are banned for life. Get out of here. Scram. And since that time...
pretty cutthroat. Pretty ruthless. Dana White put his foot down.
Well, since that time, they've reinstated his press credential.
Well, there was a lot of outrage. People were going crazy on the internet. Twitter was a real was a buzz of this, apparently, and people were just really angry that the quote unquote best reporter in MMA right now was just stripped of his credentials because of reporting something that he heard from what he considers to be legitimate sources. And he even said that after the fact, that he didn't just go off a whim or off of somebody that works on the inside of the company. He had one source and he went to another source and that person backed it up as well. And he considered that to be good enough to go public with it. And at that point, if you're Dana White, you need to be more concerned with the sources. If you're worried about that stuff getting leaked before your press release is concerned, you need to worry about who those sources are and not the reporter who's reporting it.
So let me, here's the thing. Again, I'm of two minds on this. But I guess I was sort of thinking about this in big picture terms a little bit. And this is just a general thing for me. Because I heard Helwani do the rounds with his media tour, and Lemitard, he did Rich Eisen, and I guess my question to you is, like, are we at the point where, like, these companies no longer need the media to the same degree that they needed them before? Like, if you are the UFC, why, like, you're giving this guy free tickets to your fight, right? It's not like they're banning him from buying a ticket. They're banning him from access to, like, behind the scenes to talk to guys. If this is your company, like, if we're talking about something that's not sports, right? If we're talking about, Walmart or, like, wherever you work, at the medical center where you work, okay? Do you feel like you would have to give, like, a reporter wanted to write a story about your work? Would you feel like you would have to give them, like, behind the scenes access to everything that goes on?
No, I would give them vague. I would give them vague details. I would give them general buzzwords and things like that. I wouldn't give them anything, any sort of details at all. We're a private company.
If they annoyed you for any reason, would you not want to ban them from your work because of there's some sort of, like, right to press or, like, some sort of journalistic ethical rules that you feel like you don't want to cross? You'd probably be like, no, you know what? I'm tired. If they wrote just a negative, story about you and about how all day you sit in the snack room and you eat sunflower seeds and you don't do your productivity is way down at work, wouldn't you be like, you need to see him again? Wouldn't you be like, you know what? Get the hell out of here. And yes.
Honestly, you can't. I don't know if you can kick them out because they. I mean, I guess you probably could with a private company or whatever. But you can just tell them nothing and give them no information. Then what are they going to do? They have nothing.
Right, but you also, like, don't have to give them something. You don't have to, like, give them a parking pass so they can park and come into your office. You don't have to give them, like,
access to the building. No, we don't have to. We don't have to give them a pass to come in. No, we'd have. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
You don't have to, like, let them set their cameras up in the break room, or, like, let them set the cameras up and film you. Let them, like, listen in on phone calls that you're making. You don't have to do any of those things that you allow them to do because you have a symbiotic relationship with them. They provide a press outlet. But I guess my question is, like, does anyone need the press in 2016? Like, does the NFL need press? You know what I mean? Like, does the NFL need Peter King at this point? I feel like they don't. So, if the UFC, as a company, like, they don't want Ariel Helwani, like, if they decide, like, they don't want this guy breaking news because they want to break their own news, like, you could say this is, like, a violation of journalistic ethics and all he did was act like a journalist. But, like, I guess I'm at the point where it's like, well, what if they decide they don't need journalism? You know, you could still, like, nobody's stopping you from reporting on it. Stopping you from, like, getting outside the building or buying a ticket or, like.
Well, that's where the problem comes, though. If he hasn't done anything ethically wrong and they're if they don't want to have journalism, that's fine, but they can't employ other people. They can't allow other people there as well. They have to get rid of all the other reporters that have the same type of credential as he does. And maybe they could find a way around that, and they could create a new credential for someone that they would like to keep around, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is that they would have to get rid of all those other reporters as well if that was their basis for it. So rather than get rid of everyone and rip all credentials,
why,
they reinstated him because he didn't do anything wrong.
No, but why wouldn't they just be able to keep the people they like and get rid of the ones they didn't? Because it creates an atmosphere of bias. I guess
you need to have a solid reason for ripping someone's credentials away. I mean, that's why there are rules in place. And I know that as far as CLNS Radio is concerned, there are certain things that certain protocols that Jared Weiss has to follow as far as being around the locker room and the Celtics facility is concerned. And if he doesn't follow those things, then we would not have credentials. So there are rules in place. And, I mean, this seems to be, on the surface, a snap decision by Dana White because he was upset that something was released before his press release is concerned, and not actually some sort of a mole that some people have alluded to, or the fact that maybe this guy is doing something unethical to get his information. He apparently it seems to be as though he just reported the news, and that's the way that I've seen it portrayed. So that's what I'm going on. But the point is that if there was some sort of rule that he broke, then absolutely they could strip his credential. But the fact that they're backpedaling now instead of saying that he broke a rule or trying to figure out a rule that he broke, to me, says that he didn't do anything wrong, and that's why he's getting his credentials back.
I guess what I'm getting at is this, Murray. In the past, particularly when it comes to sports, okay, the reason the press has had a symbiotic relationship with sports leagues is because sports leagues need the press to get out information about their sport, to promote their sport, to, like, you know, people would read information in newspapers and online stories. Now, in 2016, like, athletes wouldn't be able to speak for themselves. They'd have to speak in an article. In 2016, anyone can get anything they want out there to enough people to see it in a way that, like, doesn't even require the press at all. It seems to me... It seems to me that, like, the primary reason this press system still exists, and especially, like, in a case like this where they decided they wanted to ban Helwani, and they then reneged on that after he, like, made a media tour, the press is sort of like they're like the Teamsters Union. Like, I think that the only reason that Helwani's ban got rescinded is because he made enough of a big deal out of it where the UFC didn't want the negative publicity from other press. You know what I mean? I think they were willing to accept whatever negative publicity was going to come from Helwani originally, but once they saw what the fallout... So the press is, like, sort of creating its, you know, it's cementing its own presence as a monster, because anytime anyone does anything the press doesn't like, they're gonna you know, be all over them for their lack of journalistic integrity. But I just don't see why a company like has to allow a reporter to have access and they can't just decide they don't like him anymore and say, okay, well, now we're not giving you access anymore. It's their company, it's their access. Yes. Does it look like they're being petty? I agree with you that they're being petty. But, like, why are they not allowed to be petty? I guess
if that were the case, they would have come up with something petty and they would have said this is why. But that's not the case. They gave into the backlash. So that tells me that there is nothing to be even to be petty about. They completely are allowed to come up with an excuse that they don't want him around anymore and use that excuse. And instead of saying he leaked information that we specifically told people not to leak, they backpedaled and said, we're going to give him his credentials back.
Well, no, they tried to justify it by saying that the reason that they let him go is because their policy is to expect people to, when they have a story, to come to them first and ask if it's true. But Helwani even admitted it, and it's logical that, yeah, they would have just denied it and then released the story themselves. So it would have killed his scoop, which is fine. he made his decision to release the scoop because that was important to him, and he didn't expect that consequence. But I still feel like they're within their right to say, you know what, screw you then. I don't understand why this is like such an ethical violation to people, other than this idea of like you know, journalists needing access in sports, and the secondary notion of like the UFC has been very shady with a lot of
I also think that it seems like a knee jerk reaction, banned for life. Like, seriously, UFC, this is your top reporter. If you're gonna make a statement, ban him for 60 days. Ban him from UFC 200. Say that he can't report on that, and then he can come back after that. Do something different than that. But banning him for life just seems totally Dana White, totally over the top, totally UFC. And again, they seem to have made a decision about something and not really thought it through. If honestly, the backlash would not have been there if they had said this guy's suspended for 2 months, or even if he couldn't cover UFC 200, I don't think it would have been that bad. But the extremity of banning him for life just seems to be a little too much for me.
All right, fair enough. I guess to me it's not really about the consequences so much as it is like ultimately the company's right to decide what they want to do with the press, and the press, like, it's I don't know, it's getting to the point where like they seem a little too big for their bridges. But I also understand like in practical terms what you're saying about like, yeah, did they overreact? Sure. But I'm sort of like arguing for their right to overreact, I guess.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to the end then, because that call line is not lit up. 323-642-1484. First time in a month, and we're chugging into the station slow here. If you haven't heard out there in Sportsland, the greatest boxer of all time, Muhammad Ali, has passed away, and that's what we're going to end with here tonight. I'm not really sure where you're going with it, Calvin.
Yeah, I'm going contrarian. So here's my thing, and this is why I'm hesitating to even talk about this. I got a conversation with a friend of mine, and this is something sort of I tend to want to do, because I get the notion, like, when somebody dies, okay, to lionize them and to talk about all the good things in their life. And my natural inclination in that situation is to just to point, like, to point to things that, like, that made them, like, more, not this hero that they're necessarily being laid out to be, but like more of a mortal person. And like, they had their flaws too, and I don't think there's anything wrong with recognizing that fact. But I think that people are reluctant to hear any negativity, and they think it's like it's disrespectful. What do you just as a general rule, not applying to Muhammad Ali at all, but where do you come down on that notion when someone passes away?
Obviously, the joyous parts of their life are going to be the ones that you're talking about, and you're going to really reflect on the good times. You don't want to reflect on any sort of bad things that would have happened, or that they were involved in, or what have you. But I think that that's part of the grieving process. And if people really feel connected to Muhammad Ali or whoever has passed away in their life, they're really going to focus on that stuff. So it's just a natural human reaction, and I think that it's necessary to look at those things and celebrate people's lives, unless they were an absolutely horrible human being and were a murderer or a rapist or something of the like, you know. And then at that point, it's really only the people in their families that are going to be battling with how to reflect on that person's life, because everybody else is going to look at them as a bad person. But for someone that has experienced so much success and helped out a lot of different people and has so many different stories about the good things that they've done in their life, then by all means, that should be the thing that that is focused on.
What if it was a political figure that had political views different from yours, would you be inclined to say something negative about them at the point in which they died?
You know what? I mean, I don't know. I think it you still need to separate politics from that type of stuff. Just because when it all comes down to it, politics has very little effect on the majority of the people in this country, Calvin, and not to get too political here on this show, but the majority of the people in this country, as far as I've seen, actually aren't voting. And to me, that says that, sure, some of them aren't eligible to vote because of their age. They're too young. Some of them aren't eligible to vote because they aren't citizens yet or whatever, what have you. But the majority of the people in this country that aren't voting, that just to me says they don't care who the president is. They don't necessarily care who their local governor is or their mayor. So general politics don't necessarily matter to the general population as far as, in my opinion, anyway. So when you're looking at somebody that has been a political figure or even a celebrity that has been outspoken in one way or another, if there are other things that you enjoyed that they did, or there are policies that they put in place that you actually agreed with, then I think the tendency is still to focus on those good things as opposed to any of the bad thoughts that you may have had.
Ironically, it's voting day here, primary voting day here in California, and I did not vote today, but not because I don't care. It's more because I don't have any interest in any of the candidates. So I think that's also a possibility.
Okay, so you also then don't believe in the philosophy of voting for the least of many evils in that case?
It depends. It depends, one, on the disparity of evil, and two, I'm not convinced I know who the least bad candidate would be. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat, but I think that Republicans and Democrats sort of they villainize people in the other party, and this is why I was asking this political candidate question, because I think that you can disagree with someone's politics while recognizing that just because they see the world differently than you doesn't automatically make them a terrible person. I think maybe this is a California thing, maybe it's the same in your state, but I find that we are largely a liberal state, but we have obviously very passionate conservatives as well, but I find that that people who see things on one side of the political aisle just see the opposite, liberals see Republicans as terrible people and vice versa. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but you must be referring to Muhammad Ali as a conscientious, I am stepping over this word. That's foolish. objector of the war, and also his outspoken, changing his name to Muhammad Ali, his outspoken black Muslim thoughts and things like that. Just the way that he portrayed himself in the media, and people, to me, still need to look past anything they may disagree with and look at him as an icon. And everybody around the world, many, many people know who this guy is. And he did a lot of great things for a lot of people.
Well, I met Muhammad Ali when I was a kid. Obviously, he was, not a fighter at that point. He was an older gentleman. Could not have been nicer to me. He did this trick where he cut off his own thumb, but he had a fake thumb that he apparently just carries around with
him
for that purpose.
That's funny.
I spent several hours with him because my father does video production work for movies and television and commercials. He was filming a commercial, so I was on the set that day, and I sort of, spent a day with Muhammad Ali, and I found him nothing short of just a charming, nice guy. But I think, we can separate the boxing from the human being part of it. I think that Muhammad Ali,
in 1975, after Elijah Muhammad died, Muhammad Ali sort of left the Nation of Islam and just became, you know, a normal Muslim. And I think from that point, we saw a lot more of his softer side. But some of the things that Muhammad Ali said and did as a member of the Nation of Islam, I personally can't condone. And I think that, like, I think that people, because he was a conscientious, well, I can't say that either, objector, and because he represented, you know, a certain attitude about race rights, and, you know, Muhammad Ali was himself in the face of people expecting him not to be, and in that sense, he was truly an icon. I think people, you know, completely whitewashed sort of some of the darker sides about him. He was not, and I'm not trying to like, you know, point all these fingers at Muhammad Ali. I think he leaves a tremendously complex legacy. I don't like the way he treated Joe Frazier. I don't like the way he treated his some of his wives, but that's between he and them. I don't like a lot of things he said about white people. But, you know, he was also a guy who, like, yeah, he did a lot for race relations. He did a lot for Vietnam. So where am I left with is just, I think that as a boxer, he got several decisions that I and many people thought he lost. So I do not think he's the greatest boxer of all time. So I guess my feelings about this are tremendously mixed up. But and that's fine. I do think that ultimately he was an icon. He was a great man. He was an iconic talker. He did a lot for the sport of boxing and just sports in general and human rights. But I think that he was far from perfect. And I sort of, like, push back against people just so over the top lionizing him in the wake of his death. And I understand why, but it's to the degree that it makes me uncomfortable.
Who's the greatest boxer of all time?
Greatest boxer of all time is Sugar Ray Robinson. The greatest heavyweight of all time is probably Joe Louis.
All right. Fair enough. That's going to do it for us here. A few minutes early compared to what we were expecting.
We can talk about the rest if you want. Are you trying?
Oh, you know what? You know what I just noticed? I don't know if they really want to come on the air with us, but Liz and Danielle have hit the board a few minutes ago. I wasn't even looking at the board.
Was it tandem calling?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. They've been listening.
How can you tell it's two people?
Well, because there's two different names on the board right now. One coming up on 7 minutes, the other coming up on four. And maybe I did that a little too early.
She left?
No, they're still sitting there.
Oh, so why'd you do it too early?
Liz.
She's not ready.
Hello.
Hi, hello. Look
Hi.
At this. Oh, Danielle,
Hi.
You guys together?
No.
No?
No, you're here.
Do you want
to... You're here. Jamel?
She's not going to say anything. She's shy.
So you want to talk to us about Fat Axl Rose?
Oh my god. No, I just found that story very funny. Guys, how was the show tonight? Sorry that I missed a lot of it.
Oh, you missed the show. Well, you're going to have to go back and listen on Blog Talk Radio or check my Twitter feed because it's going to be there. I'm pretty sure it's already there.
We had a few laughs.
You laughed?
Yeah, we talked about some serious things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I badmouthed Muhammad Ali.
That's true.
I listened to that.
It's true.
I listened to that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yep.
Who's going to win the NBA Finals there, Liz? What do you think?
Who do I want to win?
Who's going to win?
And I don't want the world to see me, because I don't.
Yeah. greatest band of all time here. There they are.
That was the worst. Golden State's gone, for sure.
Who's gonna die? Who's gonna die this weekend, Game of Thrones?
Oh,
what? We can't start
and... Well, thank you all. Thank you for listening to Crow Sisters. Goodbye. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
It's good to be back.
Salt and laughter too.
A scoop of kids to add the spice.
A dash of love.